The job market in 2025 has been marked by layoffs and highly competitive for job seekers. It has also been marked by the rise of short-term contracts and interim roles. We have also seen hybrid work winning over full-time presence in the office, despite the insistence of some employers to bring workers back into the office full-time. Another topic I have worked a lot with my clients this year has been the salary negotiations piece, since salaries on offer seem to be lower than those being offered 2-3 years ago. And also, what is executive presence after all? How do we network if offices and business centers are half empty? And what does self-promotion look like? In this conversation with Jeff Slade, chairman of the Slade Group, we discuss all of these issues that marked recruitment and the job seekers' experience in 2025, highlighting the flat job market, the ruthlessness in recruitment communication, and the impact of layoffs on job seekers. We then explore what we believe will be the hallmarks for 2026, such as the growing demands for interim roles, the challenges of negotiating flexibility, and the influence of AI on job applications. We also touch on the importance of self-marketing, networking, and building executive presence in a competitive job market. This is the third time that Jeff joins me at the end of the year for a reflection and a forward-looking conversation. I love that it's a casual chat between friends and you can be a fly on the wall listening to us. Why Jeff? Because he is recognized as a captain of his industry here in Australia, the originator of high-quality recruitment services in the country, and his group operates from entry-level clerical jobs all the way to senior executive appointments through their several recruitment brands, Interchange Bench, Slade Group, Synchro Partners, and Transurch. As recent as last week, a client mentioned how a conversation with Jeff years ago, after not moving forward in a role, changed his outlook in his life and career. He has that impact on people and represents what we want recruiters to be for us, both great for their clients and for the candidates. I hope that you will enjoy this conversation as much as I did. Hi, I'm Renata Bernardi, and this is the Job Hunting Podcast, where I interview experts and professionals and discuss issues that are important for job hunters and those who are working to advance their careers. So make sure that you subscribe and follow, and let's dive right in. We're both drinking coffee.
Is that all right?
This is a casual conversation. This is not your first rodeo, Jeff. We've done this how many times now? 3 or 4? I can't remember.
Yeah.
Every year, don't we? We do this. I'm going to put the link below. I mean, for those hardcore listeners who want to go back and see what life was like back in 2023 and 24, I'll put the links below. But I couldn't wait to have this conversation with you, because I didn't expect 2025 to go the way it went. And I feel like I was too Pollyannish back at the end of 2024 with my predictions for early 2025. And it didn't go well. It was not what I expected.
What were my predictions? I can't remember.
No, you were much more taciturn. You were much more pessimistic than I was. You knew. But I think we both thought that once the elections were over, both in the US and in Australia and UK, we thought that that would be, you know, a stabilizing factor. And I don't think that that was at all. So I want to start with this overview of 2025. What would you describe the job market to be in 2025?
Pretty flat.
Flat. Were there any unexpected developments that took job seekers or employers by surprise?
I think possibly some companies were, I hesitate to use the word ruthless, but I think more ruthless in their application of the way they communicated with candidates.
Mm-hmm.
Which probably left a sour taste in the mouth of quite a lot of people. Either that or they didn't hear at all. which I think is a common, and that's not just, you know, not corporates. I mean, that's a lot of recruitment companies too.
Yes. When you say ruthless, are you saying they didn't reply back to candidates, letting them know outcomes? Yeah. What do you mean by that?
That, but also when they did, it was cursory. There was no sort of feeling or I'm sorry to let you know or
yeah.
No heart.
What?
In the communication.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people were very disappointed in that.
I can imagine. Yeah.
Yeah.
This year I interviewed a recruiter who lost her job, a talent acquisition manager who worked in-house and lost her job in a, you know, large-scale layoff. And she was so horrified with what she experienced as a job seeker. It really changed her. It really affected her, you know, as a talent acquisition manager, now back at work. And she found a job relatively quickly, but that's because she knows so much about how things work. Still very shocked by the ruthlessness in the job market. Yeah. Yeah, okay. I'll put the link to that episode below. She's in the UK, and that was a really interesting one because I don't have a lot of UK guests on my podcast, so it was nice to have her.
Mm-hmm.
I think 2025, from my perspective, it was a surprise right early in the year because it felt like there were so many layoffs happening at scale in large organizations. I mean, most recently, we've had ANZ. But throughout the year, we've had lots of large layoffs. And for the job seeker, it gives them a little bit extra worry because of the competition in the job market. Even though we don't see a lot of employed professionals competing with the job seekers, there were very highly qualified job seekers competing with each other. So that's something that throughout the world, you know, I have clients in the US and we had the public servants and then we had the United Nations and all its, you know, affiliated agencies. And then we had all the tech companies and, you know, many banks and financial jobs. People are still unemployed since April, May. And it's been really tough.
I think the turmoil in markets generally or countries generally. You know, mm-hmm. The world's not in a pretty place at the moment.
Yeah.
I think people are suffering as a result of that. No one knows what our friend Mr. Trump's going to do next.
Mm-hmm.
England's almost shot itself in the foot. You know, there's chaos almost wherever you look.
Yes.
And we're probably as well off as anybody almost. From what I can see.
Yeah, it seems like we have a little buffer here in Australia compared to other economies. Let's go back.
We're actually learning anything from all of that is another question.
Yes, good point.
Especially in Victoria. I mean, Victoria is a basket case.
Yes.
And, you know, the job market in Melbourne is very tough.
Agreed.
And yeah. I guess given you're in Melbourne and I'm in Melbourne, that's where most of your customers are. And it's certainly where most of my customers are.
Yeah. I do have quite a good balance between Melbourne and Sydney. And I have seen similar issues in Sydney as well. There was a time when I wasn't even working as a career coach where people were moving to Sydney for roles. You don't see that happening anymore. So that's a problem, I think, with all of our big cities. Tell me about the roles that you find are in demand, that has been in demand this year in 2025. Were there industries or roles that you feel that were more in demand than others?
Not really.
No.
I think one area where there has been increased demand is in interim and temporary help.
Yes. That market has grown, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's true. Do you think it signals that the employer is uneasy to make long-term decisions and that's why they're contracting for the time being because of, yeah? Mm-hmm.
Well, I think it's two-way. Companies are reluctant because they're not confident of what's coming down the pipeline next.
Mm-hmm.
I think candidates equally are not confident because they don't know what they're going to get into.
Mm-hmm.
And people are reluctant to move, generally speaking, for that reason. And so they're much harder to shift.
Yeah. In previous discussions, Jeff, I remember us discussing the fact that the people employed are not applying for roles. And when they are, they don't accept it. They go back to their employer and renegotiate their packages. Is that still happening? I'm assuming that senior level that Slade and Transurch operate in.
Yeah, it is happening.
Yeah.
It largely depends on the reason that they're prepared to look in the first place. You know, usually the immediate manager is the big problem. That's why people move. So depending on his or her behavior will largely indicate whether or not someone will take a job or not take a job. If they think they can live with this, then they may not end up taking a new job unless they're very confident that they're moving to something more in line with what they're looking for. Otherwise, they're prepared to go back and discuss it.
Yeah. I think what that does to the process for the job seeker is that, you know, the second and the third options, they have to be on standby for way longer.
Yeah.
Not hearing back from the recruiters for weeks.
Often the recruiters don't hear back from the company for weeks either.
Correct. You know,
that's not always the case, clearly, but...
Mm-hmm.
But the reality is that recruiters do get mucked around to an extent by the people that they're talking to within the corporates. But the person they're talking to in the corporates probably getting mucked around by person up the tree too. So,
yeah.
You know, it just balloons down or cascades down the line.
Yes. I remember being in that situation as a candidate, just waiting like to hear back from the recruiter. What's the best practice for the recruiter? What do they do to keep in touch with the candidates? Is it better not to contact the candidates because you have to be careful what you say?
No, I don't think so. I think you need to stay in communication. Even if it's to say, I'm sorry, I don't have any further news for you.
Yeah, well, that's not happening, Jeff, most of the time.
No.
Okay, so the other discussion we had last year was remote and hybrid work. And I even did a presentation as a guest of your team to a bunch of chief people officers. You weren't there, but I think you remember that happened, I think, September 2024. Mm-hmm. And the whole conversation was about hybrid work and how to optimize performance with employees that were not working full-time in the office anymore. And I made a very big case for hybrid work and for elevating leadership development of leaders and managers rather than bringing people full-time to the office. And then the very next day, Amazon said, we want every employee to come back to the office full-time. And I felt like people would then, think, what was Renata saying? You know, why did she come here and talk about hybrid? Look at the big, gigantic Amazon asking everybody to come back to the office full time. I still think I was right. Adam Grant recently did a panel discussion where he showcased a whole bunch of research showcasing that hybrid work can perform just as well as full time in the office work. If not better, depending on your industry and the type of work that you do. What do you think employers are willing to negotiate with job seekers that want flexibility? I've had situations where it has been really hard for my clients to negotiate flexibility in 2025, and then they decline the job offer.
I'm not sure I'd be doing that in 2025 unless I was very confident I'd find another job.
I agree. Yeah, it's hard.
You know, the market is tough.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're starting to see some green shoots, perhaps even beyond green shoots in the last 2 or 3 months. Whether that'll continue into 2026, I think, is debatable.
Mm-hmm.
Depending on things like, economic decisions by their Reserve Bank and that sort of thing. I don't think there's that many companies that are insisting on 5 days a week in the office. I think that horse has bolted, frankly.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we'll ever get back to 5 days a week in the office across the board.
Yeah.
We have three and two here, 3 days in and 2 days out. Seems to work okay, but I do think it has an effect on productivity. I've got a friend down on the Mornington Peninsula who owns a golf course, and I had a beer with him a few months ago, and I said, "How's business?" He said, "Well, Fridays have picked up," and I said, "What do you mean?" Knowing exactly what he meant. And he said, "Friday used to be our worst day. Now it's arguably our best, apart from the weekend." And I said, "How come?" He said, "They're all working from home," jokingly. But nevertheless, whether people make up those hours that give them that flexibility, I think is questionable.
Yeah.
Some people clearly do, and some people will always go above and beyond.
Yeah.
But I think lots of people don't.
Mm.
And in many respects, I think it's almost inherent in Australians that they think they can get away with something.
Mm.
Unfortunately.
Yes. Look, I'm going to plug in my services here. I actually am very passionate about helping leaders who are working with hybrid teams because I know it has been a difficult transition for them, yeah. Getting to know their staff well and understanding how to bring the best out of them in a hybrid or remote environment. I actually work with organizations on that. I do two team performance workshops. I work coaching managers. I've done this for federal agencies, you know, government environments. I've done it for not-for-profits. I've done it for manufacturing companies. So if you're listening and you're interested, I'd be delighted to have a conversation with you. And I really want to grow that side of my business because I do think that it is possible to optimize a remote or hybrid team by just learning having extra tools in your leadership tool set to make sure that you are achieving your goals and not just accepting, you know, a team that's underperforming and not cohesive. You want cohesion. You want culture to develop in those environments. Yeah.
Well, you should go and talk to me because I'd be interested in having a chat with you about that.
You know what? I'm going to come in and have a coffee with you down at the farm.
All right.
I keep saying to you I'll be doing this, but I will because now the weather is improving. I'd much rather drive south than drive north these days. Okay. All right. So let's talk about... Sorry?
You're more than welcome.
Oh, good. I'd love to drink some wine as well instead of coffee. I think that
Well, you better come in the afternoon, not in the morning.
Okay. Deal. All right. So that's been 2025. What about 2026? Can we be optimistic again or are we just sort of...
Well, I don't think I was overly optimistic last year.
No, you weren't. I was.
And I do actually think that it is improving marginally. But, you know, it's not going to be back to pre-COVID anytime soon.
After I interviewed you last year, a few months went by and then I interviewed your wife, Anita Zimmer. I'm going to put the link below. And she said something that it was quite shocking to me, but very true. She said, "I don't think that the changes," I'm going to paraphrase her, "I don't think the changes are seasonal anymore. I think that they are tectonic. Like there is a change happening in the world of work. And it's more than just ups and downs from time of the year or economy or, you know, political issues."
I haven't seen the interview. She didn't even tell me she'd been interviewed, but.
Yes, it was really good. I was in the UK. She was here. I always seem to interview Anita when I'm somewhere else. But yeah, that, you know, I kept thinking about that because of artificial intelligence, because of remote work and hybrid work. And now you said entering and contract work seems to be growing.
Yeah.
What does that mean for people that are from my generation? I'm X, right? And we want a permanent role and we want a you know, an income that comes regularly in the bank. My clients are not from this generation that understands freelancing and contracting in portfolio careers. They can adapt, but most of them don't want to.
But you're probably a bit different to most of your Gen X colleagues because you're an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
Well, you know, you're the exact opposite to what you just described.
I know. I'm talking about my clients here and my listeners, right? They really struggle with this idea of changing the way that they were brought up to understand
how to earn a living. Yeah. Unfortunately, I don't think it's going to change. If anything, it's going to continue to go the other way. So, you know, from tectonic to more tectonic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how could I argue with my wife? She knows a lot more than I do.
Mm-hmm.
About most things.
How is that changing the recruitment business?
Interesting question. Well, I think one of the things is that we are seeing growth in interim work. And we've just had out here the global head of Transsearch from London, and she's seeing interim growth all around the world. We, that is my company, have never really focused on interim work except at what I would call the administrative levels, clerical marketing, low-level accounting,
mm-hmm.
without it being at the executive level. But there is certainly growth at the very senior executive level in those sorts of roles. So that's one way it's changing the business. I think also that individuals that are called upon to step into those roles probably need to be well aware of a couple of factors. One is that they should be, if they're not, they should be negotiating a substantially higher rate for the jobs they're stepping into because of the lack of permanency. And I think that they need to be very up to date with what that means. They also need to understand whether or not there are potential opportunities for this job to go permanent. And that will largely depend on how they tackle the role. Possibly. It might, if it's a fill-in role, you know, for maternity leave or whatever, then it's probably unlikely to go permanent. But if it's because somebody's been dispensed with for lack of performance, then you can almost guarantee that the job is either being searched for or will be searched for. And so they need to be looking to make a big impression.
Yeah.
While they've got that opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And their communication skills will play a huge part in that while they're in the company. And also with the recruiter.
I want to talk to you about two things that you mentioned in regards to entering work, but I want to bring them more broadly. One is negotiating salary.
Yep.
Negotiating salary in a year like 2025 and potentially 2026, where there is not an equilibrium between supply and demand of candidates. You know, the power lies with the employer, and the job seekers are really struggling in the current environment. Is there room for them to still negotiate when they've made an offer?
Yeah, I think there is. Because if they've been made the offer, they're clearly the candidate that stands out.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting, I went to a dinner party last night down at Flinders, in fact. One of the people there said my son, who's with one of the big major construction companies in Australia, has been offered a substantially bigger job. And he's only 28, substantially bigger job with this company, but it's out of Sydney, down the south coast. And he said, I really want the job and I really like the look of the opportunity and I think it can lead to bigger things. But he said, the dollars, I think, under par. So in his discussion with his mother was relating this story to me. So in his discussion with his superior, he sort of said, look, I really would like the job, but I don't think you're offering the right sort of money. And the employer said to him, well, you better go and do some homework. Go and apply for other jobs in other companies and see what is on offer. He said, I've already done that. And he's pulled out the piece of paper and said, these are the jobs I've been offered. And I think that was a good move.
Mm-hmm.
They're now still negotiating. But it wouldn't have got to that if he hadn't been prepared, probably.
Yes. Yes.
They're the things you've got to anticipate.
Yes.
Particularly in a salary negotiation.
Mm-hmm.
But equally, I just did a job, I did a search for a political organization, one of the major political organizations in Australia. And there were some difficulties around salary. And I said to the employer, why don't you make this, you know, the base salary was okay, but, you know, they'd never thought about rewarding performance. So I said, why don't you think about an STI and an LTI? If the party gains so many seats in the next election, maybe you can afford to pay a reasonable bonus.
Mm-hmm.
If you win the next election, maybe you pay a bigger bonus. And they then went with that. And neither party had thought about it, neither the candidate nor the client.
Well done. That seems so obvious, isn't it? Because when they win, they do get a bigger budget anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Makes sense. That's really interesting. The other thing I wanted to ask you was about the communication piece. Now, with AI, last year you mentioned that people are using ChatGPT to do their job applications and that cover letters are coming to your team looking exactly the same. I wonder what that says and what that's doing to job seekers' ability to think by themselves, you know, and answer job interviews. Has your team noticed a difference pre-AI and post-AI on how job seekers are communicating with them?
Well, for a start, I don't think that many job seekers are using AI. I think it's a relatively small percentage.
Okay.
So far. But my warning to those who are is that they can't afford to ignore their own creativity. What do they really think? It's the same when I have a consultant who's delivering a shortlist. I say to them, unless you're prepared to back yourself and say, I think this person's the best person for the job, and these are the reasons, and that person might be the third or fourth best person in terms of match against the position description. But if they're able to comment on things like character and integrity and all those sorts of things, I think they need to make those sorts of comments, or their communication skills, or their presentation skills. You know, it's really important that the candidate themselves can do that and think about things in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
Makes you stand out. If you've all got the same AI-created application, you aren't going to stand out. And passion too.
Yes.
Why should I be the candidate for this job? If you can express passion about the job or about the company or both, and you've got the inherent capabilities and you're good at communication and you're good at presentation skills and all that sort of thing, you can stand out by expressing that.
Mm. If your team can tell that somebody has been using AI, I mean, I'm assuming that they can tell. Yeah. And if that has an impact on their decision about taking a candidate forward or not.
I think yes and no is the answer, really.
Mm.
Some people will pick it, others won't, depending on the level of experience they've got, depending on what they think of the candidate anyway, how deeply they want to investigate that sort of thing.
What do you think, Jeff, has been the biggest issues for your team in 2025? You know, what are the biggest complaints they have with the recruitment process today? I'm trying to find things that could help my job seekers.
Yeah,
yes.
I understand that. Well, I think what we just talked about is one.
Mm-hmm.
I think you can't apply for a job and be vanilla. You know, as though you, this is just another application and do I care whether I get it or not? I think you've got to be able to, somehow in the way you write or what you write,
mm-hmm.
you've got to be able to sort of get that message across, or even on the telephone, you've got to be able to get that message across that this is really important to you.
Yeah.
And not only is it really important, why is it really important? And why do I think I'm a good candidate for this job? You know, if I'm reading the advertisement correctly or I've been briefed by the recruiter correctly, I can tick off these boxes. This is what I'm all about. But too many candidates ignore all that. I hesitate to say this, but in a way we're sort of developing a society that is a bit vanilla.
Yes.
I think you've heard me say this before. One of the things I have great difficulty with in here, in my own company, is getting young people to build personal relationships. I say to them, if I was going to meet a young lady and I thought, you know, maybe I want to marry her or I want to have a long-term relationship with her, can I do that on the phone or via email? No, you can't. Get out there and see them face to face. There's a real reluctance to do that. Now, I don't believe it's because they're lazy. I just think this has developed over the last 5 years or so, whereby they just don't want to get off their backside and go and meet somebody because maybe they feel that they don't have the confidence to win them over.
Mm.
So you've got to believe in yourself. Self-belief is a big thing, not only in finding a job, but in I've personally found in my own life, I don't think I would have ever won the lady who's now my wife over if I hadn't had self-belief.
Yeah. Yes.
I wouldn't have won a lot of jobs out there in the market if I hadn't had self-belief. If I hadn't been prepared to say to the client, I think you should think about this in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, I've probably lost some jobs as a result of that. But also, on balance, I've probably won a hell of a lot more than I've lost.
I can tell that this is by far the most challenging issue for my listeners. I know this because whenever I talk about networking in my episodes, it boosts my listenership. So that episode gets more interest. And the other thing that also is of great interest to every people that follow me on LinkedIn and on the podcast is executive presence. Those are the two keywords that get me the most views, network mm-hmm. and executive presence. And I think that they are linked because to network as an experienced professional, you want to have the executive presence, you know, not that it needs to be, like you said, you don't want everybody to have the same executive presence, but you want to present yourself well when you are in front of people.
You want people to remember who you are.
Yes, that's the whole point, top of mind.
Yeah, and I think it gets down largely to a lack of confidence. And the longer you're out of work, the less confidence you've got. So it's something that really has to be worked on, in my opinion, is that ability to walk into a room and be present and almost take over the fact that I want these people to understand who I am or at least remember me for the fact that they have met me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's difficult. You know, I think it's very difficult when you don't have confidence in yourself, but it's something that really does have to be worked on.
Yeah. Jeff, let's play this game of imagining what we would do if we were unemployed, you and I. Let's say, you know, we're both in our mid-40s. big layoff happened in our organization. We've been working there for over 15 years, if not more. All of a sudden, it's the end of 2025, and it's the end of our time in that organization. Together with hundreds of people, we're out. Knowing what you know about how recruitment works, what would you do next?
I would market myself. And this can change from, you know, people have different circumstances. Some of these people you're talking about in their 40s, for instance, have got two or three kids. They've got to feed and educate. They've got their wife or husband very concerned because income is drying up. You know, they might get a nice payout from the corporate, but that will only last so long. So they have to learn to market themselves. One of the things I recommend is that they understand what it is that they bring to an organization. And I think it's very easy to think that, you know, maybe I've not got the skills I thought I had, but I think if you really analyze it, you know, what is it I bring to the table? Then I'd be looking at who are the companies in Australia, not necessarily just in the city in which you live, that have some relationship to the industry I've previously been in. You know, if you've worked in banking, should you be looking at insurance as another part of the financial services industry? Just as an example, and identify those companies that are either in trouble from what you can read or growing, maybe through acquisition, maybe through just the fact that they've performed very well, or whatever circumstance has brought them to your attention. Then I would be putting together a spin to my resume or to my CV, and I would be calling the company, either the CRO, CPO, sorry, or the CEO. What I've always said to my guys is, it's much easier to work from the top down than the bottom up. But there's a bit of a propensity to start at the bottom and work your way up, which you never get to really.
Yeah.
Because again, it's that confidence factor.
Yeah.
So I would be approaching either the CEO, and it's, you know, what a lot of people I think fail to recognize is that if the CEO takes your call and you tell them what you're looking for and who you are and what you've done, and he says, well, look, you really need to talk to my CPO.
Mm-hmm.
So then ring the CPO and say the MD has suggested I give you a call, is likely to garner a much more positive response than if you're just Joe Blow off the street.
Mm-hmm.
You have to use that to your advantage. And generally speaking, I think if you or I looked at what sort of companies and what sort of industries too, and which industries are growing, which industries are shrinking, if you want a long-term career, then you've really got to try and position yourself to get into a growth industry. It's interesting, when I started in this business 59, I used to sit there and I had a script. I didn't think people would talk to me because I was 21. And I'd sit there with the script and I'd say, I'm a person. They'd say, what do you do? I'd say, I'm a personnel consultant. They'd say, what's a personnel consultant? That's what we were called in those days.
Mm-hmm.
And that would generate more discussion. So you have to be, the people you're talking about have to be prepared to generate that discussion and make themselves attractive in the eyes of whoever it is they're talking to. A positive start to the relationship. I think I can make a difference to your company. Might be a nice way to start. And this is why. You can't just go and say, I think I might make a difference to your company and not have a reason why.
Mm-hmm.
Or reasons why. It's all about selling yourself. The same with a CV. If the CV is bland and uninteresting, you can just go to the bottom of the pile. You've got to be aggressive about it. That's the reality, especially in this sort of market.
What I love about your advice here is that this episode is coming out in December, and I find that December is such a great time to do that pre-work, to do that assessment and research. You have the time, the availability, the job market, it goes into sort of a slow...
bit of a lull.
Yeah, you might as well spend time planning, rehearsing, prepping your pitch, you know, and doing all that work. I also love because it validates everything that I tell people, but it's much better when it comes from the mouth of a recruiter.
Well, you can't get profit in your own land. I am
here.
I like to bring in outside speakers because they're sick of listening to me.
Yes. I did a webinar a couple of weeks ago and it was very well attended. And when I said, you know, there are three ways of looking for work: proactive, reactive, and passive. Reactive is when you look at jobs that are advertised and you apply. And if you do that, that's a disadvantage. You know, you missed out on all of the networking during the time that they were discussing the role, all of the connections that you could have had. You know, before applying for a role. Passive is when you have such a great profile and reputation, people reach out to you. So that could be a very well optimized LinkedIn profile. You know how passionate I am about LinkedIn. You have a reputation that precedes you. People will think of you. You just sit there and you wait and people will come to you because you've done the hard work. And proactive is exactly what you're proposing. You know, you reach out, you do the research. And every time I say this in a webinar, and it's not the first time, I say this all the time, people will come in the Q&A and anonymously say, this does not work for me. I'm like, it works for everybody, right? Like, it really does. You just need to pull your socks up and not be afraid. You know, there's courage and vulnerability in doing that.
There is.
It's not really.
What have you got to lose? All they can say is no.
Exactly. Yes, yes. Exactly what I told a client yesterday. You know, you don't have a job yet. The worst that could happen is you won't still have a job after this. Yeah. You just need to take some strategic risks. You know, it's not a big risk. You need to be prepared and approach them with knowledge, with confidence and courage.
And this doesn't have to be verbal. This can be in your CV. Expressed the right way and with a positive bent to it, you can make yourself interesting.